Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the
Anarchy Gumbo Podcast.
I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state. Why the government is nothing without the state.
Freedom fiends.
And how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool.
Freedom fiends.
Check out the Bad Quaker podcast at badquaker.com.
Freedom fiends.
Anarchy Gumbo podcast.
As he walked across the prairie, a very large Indian man stepped up to him and said, "That's a very nice extra finger you have there on your left hand."
Yeah.
And Alexander realized that he was having a hallucination. Indeed, there was no Indian, and he didn't have a left hand. And that was the twist in that story.
All right. You were dropping in and out a little bit. Do you have something else going on your internet?
Possibly. Let me go downstairs.
Let me stop recording because I was doing recording and, you know, I was acting like the government. I was recording you without asking you, but you did call me to be recorded. So I think that makes it okay. I'll wait.
I failed to come up with a town name. Terrible.
You're like writing nursery, you know, bedtime stories for the criminally insane. I guess people didn't catch that whole thing, but yeah. Bedtime stories about alternate scary Andrew Carnegies.
Yeah, normally I wouldn't have paused like that. I would have been able to fill in a city name, but my mind just went blank suddenly.
Well, you know, with you old people, after 4 in the afternoon, your brain starts to get a little foggier. You'll be good in the morning tomorrow at 4 a.m.
That is true. I'm a lot sharper in the mornings.
Yeah, you haven't been podcatting a lot lately. So today we're doing an Anarchy Gumbo Bad Fiends episode. Even though Anarchy Gumbo is no more, we're doing one.
Yeah, I have kind of been in a funk lately. According to my wife, I've just kind of been moping around and not really starting a lot of projects and not finishing anything.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think being on the road for a month, going to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to the LP parties thing and then going to Pork Fest and then just camping around from place to place across northern New York. I kind of just don't want to be at home. I want to be back on the road with the RV again.
Not me, man. I don't want to travel. Although I haven't done it in a long time. So, but... Yeah, I mean, if my wife could retire and we could drive around the country solving mysteries, I think I'd like it. But I'm not really a guy who wants to go, you know, somewhere for a weekend and come back. I either want to go out for months at a time or just be here watching squirrels and polishing my bayonets.
It's really a kind of a nice thing being in different campgrounds. The wildlife, if you can even put it that way, if there is wildlife in campgrounds, they get really accustomed to a lot of people, and so they're very friendly, like the animals around my house, like the squirrels and the birds and everything. I guess a lot of old people in a lot of campgrounds feed the squirrels.
Yeah, because squirrels are kind of everywhere. I mean everywhere. DJ and I were watching a National Geographic show about warthogs in Africa last night, and it was like the flora and fauna in that region looks so incredibly bizarre. Like giraffes, warthogs, rhinos, elephants, trees that look thousands of years old, and then squirrels that look exactly like the squirrels in my backyard, man. Squirrels are everywhere. And they kind of, I think people feed them when they travel because they make them feel at home because they're a constant. There are a few species that are kind of everywhere. Raccoons, squirrels, and deer. And there are variation in deer, but there are deer in Europe and Africa that look, at least there's antelope in Africa that look a lot like the ones here in Wyoming. And there are raccoons and turkeys. I think there are raccoons in all 50 states in America. And I think there are turkeys in 49 states. I don't think they have them in Hawaii.
I wonder if there are raccoons in Hawaii. I wonder if they're an invasive species accidentally introduced by people, or yeah, if they were already there.
Probably invasive, clinging to the edge of the Mayflower or whatever boat went over there to conquer the USS. What's the word for what the pioneers going across the West had? The USS.
Manifest Destiny.
Yes, the USS Manifest Destiny. The raccoons clang to the side of that while going to Hawaii, probably.
Diseasing you with democracy.
Yes, it was. Actually, they were probably smuggled there by the OSS, the proto-CIA, as germ warfare after World War One. Yeah, raccoons,
I'm surprised ferrets have not got out into the wild in North America and just kind of taken over.
Well, you know, I've had a note about ferrets on my list for a while, and just, you know, Nima doesn't have time to do anything anymore, so I end up with, I'm doing all the work. Nima reminds me, and I'm not really bashing him because it's kind of, you know, he's supporting a family, he's working more than full time. He just moved and didn't have internet, and so that's why we're doing this today. You and I, but yeah, Nima kind of reminds me of, I talked about how I used to go see the 10,000 Maniacs when they were a bar band. And even then, like, the singer Natalie Merchant was a prima donna before they got famous. And then she fired the band and went solo. But they used to, like, the guitar player in the band booked all the shows, and the band would show up at the club at like 7 p.m., haul all the equipment in, including the PA. They brought their own PA to shows in clubs and set it all up and sound check. And Natalie Merchant would show up at like 10 p.m., pull her microphone out of her purse, put it on the mic stand, and do the whole set. And then as soon as they were done, tumultuous applause, three encores, and then she would put her microphone back in her purse and leave with different dudes, some dude. And then the band would be sweating the equipment back out late at night. So that's kind of what Nima reminds me of. But it's not... You know, it's not that he's not willing to do it. It's more like he can't do it. There's actually a, we made a banner the other day that's, some radio station requested a banner, and I wanted Nima to give me a new picture with his new mic, because I have a picture of me that I like with my new mic, and he didn't have time to do it. And, you know, he's like, well, I can get it to you Wednesday. And I'm like, no, the guy needs it Monday. I said I'd give it to him Monday. I'm proactive. That's the fiends, man. The fiends are proactive because of me. So I'm going to give it to him Monday. And I said, I got pictures of you. I'll just use the goofiest picture I have. And I was kind of kidding, but I actually, the picture that worked the best for it was kind of goofy. It was him in a suit, with like a blue vest on, putting his thumbs up like Fonzie, going like, hey. And then it's a really serious picture of me, like, looking kind of sexy and angry at the mic. And I put me on the left and him on the right, and it looked great. And, you know, there was a banner in the middle with the fiends information, and I sent it off to the program director. And then I was complaining about me doing all the work to DJ. And then I showed her the banner, and she's like, that banner looks like it describes what you were just talking about. Cause it looks like Nima's going, hey, let's party. Let's go not work. And I'm looking at him with anger, like working at my mic.
Now, I took that banner a little bit differently. I looked at it that Nima is kind of the lighthearted, you know, in a suit, very straightforward, where you're kind of the ratchety old man saying,
what are you doing with my liberty?
Well,
this,
yeah,
is my liberty.
That's what I think I was going for subconsciously. But DJ said it looked like I was angry at him for wanting to bang the drum all day and not work, as they say. But yeah. Yeah. So somehow that had something to do with raccoons and ferrets. Yeah. So I have all these notes that we never get around to because Nima's too busy. And, you know, I mean, he has time. He shows up and pulls his mic out of his purse and puts it on the mic stand and does the show and does great. And he's incredible. And then he puts it in his purse and he leaves. But and then leaves me to, you know, do the heavy lifting of editing and everything, and then calling stations during the week, and then, you know, compiling show notes. So, but I have these show notes, and we it's not that we can't get around to all of them because, you know, we don't know. This is rare that he doesn't do a midweek show. It's because he moved and didn't have internet. But, you know, usually we have to do a little bit of pre-game and discuss before a show. And he hasn't had time to do that. So I haven't had time to incorporate some of my better ideas. And I have this one that's not very radio-tastic. It's kind of more of a midweek one like we do on this show where we cuss. But we're not cussing today because it's going to be a bad Quaker show too, because you've been slacking too. I've been carrying the Liberty, you know, me and Adam Kokesh have been carrying the Liberty mission on our backs. And Adam has a team. I don't have a team. I'd like a team. If someone would like to be on Team Fiend, they can email me at talkback@freedomfiends.com. But don't waste my time, man, because what I've found is a lot of people who are really hip to help end up like I train them and then they flake. So don't do that to me. But if you really want to help with the fiends and want a non-paying job with no room for advancement and great aspects of advancing liberty, drop an email to me at talkback@freedomfiends.com. So anyway, I had this note. It was actually going to be the title of an episode. I don't know if we'll use it for this one, but the title is Ferret Swing Party. What do you think of that, Ben?
That brings all kinds of images to my mind.
Well, I wish I'd had a camera with me because I could actually have an image of it because my wife and I actually witnessed one.
Where the ferrets were all dancing?
No, I mean swing, like as in like wife swapping swing party.
Ah, okay. Ferret. See, I was thinking
swing party. You thought, yeah, I meant like doing the old fashioned dance?
Yeah, like 1940s swing line music.
Line dancing and swing. Country and Western and jazz. No, man, we went into the pet supply store to get some Casasquin, which is something you use for pets when they get old to help with their arthritis. It's like a nutrient supplement you put in their food. And we've been giving it to Charlie, our old cat, who recently actually had a run-in with another beast. Kicked the other beast's ass, but Charlie ended up, she's 16 and she still hunts and fights and brings me dead beasts. She's an indoor cat, but she goes outdoors in our enclosed yard a few hours a day. And we don't let her out at night anymore because after dusk, you know, other animals are kind of predatory. And another cat got back there and bit her. And she was really injured. And we took her to the vet and brought her back. But now she's getting all better, but her leg is shaved. Maybe I'll use this shaved leg Charlie picture for this episode. It's pretty awesome because she looks like, yeah, I'm great. Look at me. Look at me with my shaved leg. Like, she looks really strong and wonderful. So
now she was the one that was attacked by the coyote, wasn't she?
Yeah, years ago. But and I threw a flashlight at the coyote, and the coyote dropped Charlie from her mouth and ran away. So Charlie's had an interesting life, and we're not bad cat parents. Charlie was basically a barn cat when I got her at age 3, and if I had just kept her in the house for the past 13 years, she would have been miserable. She has to be outside a few hours a day, and she's an indoor-outdoor cat. So, you know, we let her go out, and in L.A., we never let her out at night because there were coyotes in our neighborhood, but she snuck out past our feet when we were bringing in groceries one time. But yeah, now she's grounded from dusk to dawn every day. She has to stay in and she doesn't like it, but she gets to go out. She's out there right now. I'm looking at her out the window. She's sunning herself. But we went to the pet supply store to get some Casasquin, or as we call it, Casasquat, because we call little cats squittens because they look like squirrel kittens. And we call big cats, big fat cats like Charlie, squats. So we were going to get some Casasquat, and we looked at the ferrets. We always stop and look at the other animals. And the ferrets were having an orgy, Ben Stone. You could not have scripted this. It was amazing. They were in the store that we're in here in Wyoming, the pet store in Casper. There's, you know, kind of a big round like tank, I guess. It's kind of like the shape of a pill. It's round and plastic sided and about 5.5-6 feet in diameter and about 2 feet high. And it's got and a lid on it, and it's got ferrets in it. And, you know, sitting on a bunch of sawdust. And they're usually, you know, there's usually between 5 and 10 of them in there. And they're not legal in some states. You cannot buy them in California. They're illegal to possess or sell. But here they're legal. And they're usually doing different stuff. Like, you know, 3 of them will be sleeping, 2 of them will be grooming each other, and 1 of them will be, you know, drinking from
plotting
the water.
Plotting
to take over the world. Yeah, but this was like 8 of them in a pile trying to hump each other, and like 2 of them like on the side of one of them, like each licking its ear. And I can't describe it any further on a friendly, family-friendly show, and it probably already blew that G rating here, but yeah, man, I mean, I was thinking, it's Wyoming. It's really conservative here. I'm surprised when the ferrets do that, they don't, you know, put a sheet over it and say the ferrets are sleeping so the kids don't see it. It was pretty awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's a it's a little bit unfair to compare your situation to Adam Kokesh's, though, bouncing back to what we were talking about a second ago, because a part of the deal, you're not offering a McMansion for a bunch of people to come and live there for free and have all the party accessories that go with that.
Well, that's true, I guess. But, you know, I guess I could build bunk beds in my basement like Fight Club, and you know, there's no windows down there, but yeah. No, I don't really want that. When I was Adam's age, when I was 30, I would have loved that. I mean, I was in a band, hot band at 30, or like, you know, it broke up when I was 30, but when I was 29, I was like at the peak of my sex and drugs game, and I basically was having a ferret swing party myself every night with humans. So yeah, I had people coming and going a lot, but no, I'm not interested in, basically I'm not even interested in people or a team. I'm interested in having work done for free. I mean, to be quite honest about it, you know, there's so much to do and we're not making much money. We're, you know, the Fiends operate on like $1,200. Like 4,000 a year, probably. We'll end up making more, but yeah, it's, put it this way, I work about 80 hours a week. I don't have time to do a day job anymore. I'm living off of very meager, comparatively to what I could be making if I were working not on the Fiends all the time. I'm living on my meager royalties from books and movies. And yeah, man, I could use some volunteer help for sure, man.
The thing about the Freedom Fiends, too, right now, is that you guys are expanding pretty dramatically in new radio stations not new radio stations, but to radio stations that you weren't at before, and new markets and everything. And this thing could really take off. You guys could be seriously rolling in some money and some popularity in 6 months or a year from now that could pay off for anybody who did want to volunteer now while the opportunity's there.
Well, stop promising away my future income, Ben, but I put it this way. Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing that I've had people, all of my movies and all of my books involved other people doing some work for free, if nothing more than appearing in them for free. The gun training thing, I'm paying that guy a percentage of sales because, you know, the whole thing was him. But everything else were, you know, everything else is like documentaries that have like 30 people in them, and they work for, you know, they sit in front of the camera and answer questions and have a good time for an hour. And sometimes I buy them lunch if I have money. And then I go work 80 hours a week for 1 to 4 years on that movie. So I can't really pay people for that. And they sign a release form that says they're doing it for free for a copy of the movie. You have to give people something, and giving them a copy of the movie is a good thing. So they all get a copy of the movie, and a lot of people get credits. Like, there are people who worked on my DIY or Die movie who were, I didn't own a camera. I was just like, I want to make a movie, and I think I know how to, I could do it. And I walked around the corner in San Francisco to the art school where I always saw the, you know, 20-year-olds out front smoking cigarettes. I was like 32. And I just said, hey, who wants to make a movie? And, you know, because they're going to art school and learning filmmaking. They're going to film school. And like in film school, you don't really make a movie, at least not for the first 2 or 3 years. You know, that was back when they were just starting to get digital cameras and, you know, everyone was working on film and it was so expensive. Like, you know, after 4 years, they let you make a short film because it's so expensive. So I have people that I got who wanted to, you know, their life goal was to be a filmmaker, who ran camera on that film. And if you go on IMDb and search those people's name, the only credit they still have is running camera on that movie. So they got something out of it for sure, man.
Jeffrey Tucker, a couple of years ago, did an article about how important it is to volunteer for something and get the experience, even if you don't get paid for it or if you get paid almost nothing for it.
Yeah.
Getting experience when you're young is critical in as time goes by, and in not just for a resume, but also in developing the critical job skills that you need and the critical person-to-person skills that you need in a professional setting.
Yeah. And Yeah, the reason I say don't promise away my future income, I was joking in my tone about it, but I was serious about it because a lot of people who did stuff on things that, you know, I worked as a labor of love and ended up making 20 grand on, but literally like put in 2 years of work. So it worked out to like 15 cents an hour, which doesn't include money for paying anybody. So, you know, people who worked on stuff for a day, they'd be like, yeah, I'll work on it for free for a day or a week. But if you make $1 million, you have to give me some. And I'm like, no. And I would just say that outright. They would say it half jokingly, but half seriously. But if I said yes to that and I made $1 million later on something else, they would come back to me and try to sue me. And I get it in writing with everybody, like what the terms are. The thing is, if somebody did a bunch of work for me now for free and I ended up making a bunch of money to where I could have staff, those are the people I would hire. The ones who proved themselves, you know, basically if you can't do something little in a responsible way, you're not going to be worth hiring to do something big. So I've gotten a lot of criticism for that. I mean, I've actually written books on how to do that. You know, my $30 film school book, a lot of it is how to get people to do stuff for free. And you read the reviews of it on Amazon. It's got like 160 reviews between the two editions. And, you know, there are 95% of them are like 5 stars. This is the best book I've ever read. This changed my life. This got me a career. And like 5% of them are like, this guy's a fraud. He just tells you to get people to be your slaves and work for free. And like, they're not slaves, man. That's not slavery. You can leave anytime you want.
Actually, it's less slavery than a lot of paying jobs are, because one of the things they really like to do in the corporate world is get you into a job where you're forced to dress in a certain way and you're forced to drive a certain car to keep up a certain image, because they don't want a junker in the parking lot. And the next thing you know, you're sitting there in a cubicle earning, you know, $80,000 a year, but you're at $78,000 a year in debt, and you can't afford to even quit. You're just locked right into that thing.
I never thought about the car thing. You know, I know that people will lease or buy on time a car that's beyond their means because they want, like if they're doing sales, because they want to look the part, and nobody wants to buy $500,000 house from someone driving a junker. But I never thought about that thing about they don't want a junker in the parking lot. Is that an actual thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was when I was working for...
You can't say it, but...
No, actually, I was going to name drop NASA. When I was...
Were you a rocket scientist, Ben? It's not rocket science.
I worked with different kinds of rocket scientists, and mostly acoustical people with doctorate degrees in supersonic this and that.
That makes me hot, man. Sound doctors makes me hot.
I was in quiet rooms that had foam pyramids in every direction that were like 8 or 10 feet long.
Could you hear your heartbeat in there?
Just about. You could almost not hear anything. It was so quiet, even when two people were talking.
I've heard that in some of them, if they're tuned correctly, they're so quiet you can not only hear your heartbeat, but you can hear the hum of your nervous system.
But yeah, in the parking, in one of the places, I showed up my first day, pulled my Harley in, parked it in one of the spots, and literally one of the managers stepped up and said, "You seriously don't ride that thing to work, do you?" And I'm like, every single day, no matter what the weather is, this is what I ride to work. You get me, you get this in the parking lot. And he turned and walked away shaking his head like, I can't believe this. This is, you know, the end of the world. How can we ever, you know, face reality now that we have this in the parking lot?
You know what I found out about Adam's team that kind of blew me away? You know, I've made jokes, and they're jokes made with love, but about how Adam's team looks like they were scripted by Hollywood. You know, you've got like Adam, the muscular ex-Marine, and you've got like Ed, you know, looks like the younger brother or clone of Adam. Like he looks like him. He dresses like him. He's a little shorter, a little less muscular, but he's still muscular. His hair is like him. you know, you've got the hip black guy, Daryl. Every TV show, every cop show, every CIA show, every, you know, even if taking it back to like the Mystery Machine and Scooby-Doo, you know, like that team had like almost the same components. They didn't have the black guy, but they had and then like the young, hip, cute computer nerd girl with glasses and tattoos. Like they always have that on the team, you know, in these shows. And what I found out, that girl on Adam's team is Liz, who I've been chatting with because we did an interview with her the other day. She heard about Adam for the first time from listening to The Fiends. She's a Fiends fan and heard about him, and she and her boyfriend went and joined his team. So, yeah, I guess if Adam is arrested for something horrible, they'll come after me for aiding the enemy and providing material support, although I didn't do it directly. I didn't know that until yesterday.
That's pretty wild that there's this crossover between all these different shows.
Yeah, and I want to know, like, you know, if we can inspire someone to go join Adam's team, why don't they just join our team? I guess we don't have a mini mansion for them to live in. They'd have to live in my tool shed in bunk beds. Yeah.
And have to drive to Wyoming for that.
Yeah. Yes. Mini mansion with bunk beds. Now with more bunk beds. That is such a typically Northern Virginia house too. I used to live there. They don't own it; they rent it. You know.
Does anybody own anything in that area? I mean, I realize somebody owns it, but it seems like everybody that I know rents or leases whatever dwelling that they're in. Nobody that I know seems to own anything in that area.
I think the government owns it all, because most people there. I mean, like the town of Reston is literally the bedroom community for the CIA. Like 95% of the people who live there work at the CIA. That's not where Adam lives. Adam lives in Herndon. Herndon, which is in Fairfax County, which is really weird. It's a really weird mixture of like really kind of redneck and, you know, really like government guys driving leased cars that are better than they could afford.
Do the Freedom Fiends get quite a few downloads from that area, that general area?
Yeah, but I think it's all the government. We get a lot from D.C., but it could just be Eddie Free downloading it over and over and over. I don't know.
Yeah, we get the Bad Quaker podcast gets a lot of hits from right in that area. And sometimes from the same, what appears to be the same IP address, downloading the same thing over and over. I don't understand.
You know what? You know what it probably is? It's probably like someone in a cubicle working for the Central Scrutinizer listens to The Fiends and Bad Quaker as part of their job. And they go just like, this is ridiculous. I've got to show my friends this. And they show their friends this, like, listen to these crazy anarchists. And then some of their friends go, yeah I kind of like this, and secretly start listening to it.
You know, now that time has gone by, prior to the big, prior to the big Napster explosion.
Yeah, boom.
Back when file sharing was not officially illegal yet, but it was questionable.
Kind of, you know? Like when LSD was popular, but before they outlawed it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was working for GE Aircraft Engines, and I set up a computer. Just we had an extra computer in our division, and so I set up a computer just for the purpose of putting a bunch of music MP3s on it, and just ran it on the interior network. There's a huge hardwired network within the facility, and then it goes out to a virtual private network that anybody in GE can get to. So I was probably, I'm going to make a conservative effort of 500 or 600 MP3s that were popular at the time. And I was having all kinds of people downloading off of those. And I was sitting there surfing the net at work, downloading more, adding to it, you know. And all of a sudden, it became like this serious underground thing that people were talking about. There was no particular identity assigned to that computer. I would just go over to it and get it going now and then. And this one guy comes walking up to me and he says, hey, you know, there's a computer that's got a bunch of music on it. And I'm like, yeah. And he starts telling me about it like it's this great secret. And it wasn't until that moment that I realized that it had become like a really super popular underground secret among all these engineers and stuff that all this music was available. And this was within probably right about the time when people started talking about that copying MP3s was against the law and you couldn't do it and stuff. So literally, I just abandoned the computer and left it there, plugged in and hooked up with no identity to it.
At GE or NASA?
And that one was in one of the GE facilities.
Okay, so yeah, there you go. GE was pirating music. Well, they
weren't. I have no idea.
I mean, I don't even know if that was piracy at that point. Was it? It wasn't illegal.
It was right in the time frame when they were deciding that MP3s were illegal.
When a bunch of old people who didn't know how to use a computer were making laws about computers, it kind of reminds me of like people who pass gun laws and say a barrel shroud is the shoulder thing that goes up.
Yeah, the internet's not like a dump truck. It's more like a series of tubes.
You know, that guy's a jerk, and I did not cry when he died, and he was a horrible statist. But actually, his assessment of the internet was not technically incorrect. And a bunch of people on Wired magazine like didn't really go to bat for him. They basically said the same thing. Like, he's an idiot. But, you know, people make fun of him for saying that. But the way he put it is not incorrect. So we're going to go to the market and then come back and talk about Adam Kokesh. Worms.
Worms.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. This is Michael W. Dean from the Freedom Fiends. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, Michael.
Good, man. So, yeah, Adam Kokesh. I love this guy. I don't know if that, I mean, no homo. No homo. I love this guy. I really am amused and intrigued by his stuff lately. Did you hear, I don't like that he's in prison, but he seems happier in prison than most people seem out, and probably happier than he seemed out, because he is, you know, his whole thing is about getting attention, and I don't necessarily mean that in like a daddy, look at me, you know, like little girl kind of way or whatever. But, you know, his whole thing, his activism involves getting eyes and ears on it. And he's getting more than he's ever gotten. Did you hear the Fox News piece yesterday? The interview?
I did. That was that really amazed me.
I'm going to play this. It was possibly the most interesting thing I've ever heard on mainstream news.
Here we go. Let's see if we can get this one.
It's a commercial. Commercials are horrible. I hate them. Oh, wait. I'm on radio. They drive my life. I love them. Commercials are the backbone of capitalism. All anarchists should love commercials. Yeah, so here we go.
A Fox 5 exclusive tonight. Anti-government activists Adam Kokesh denies any connection to the drugs that federal officers say they found in his home. But he admits the shotgun he loaded on Freedom Plaza in D.C. on the 4th of July was the real deal. John Hanrahan conducted the jailhouse interview and joins us from the newsroom now with our Fox 5 exclusive. John?
Well, stop the presses. This may be the biggest headline of all. Pro-gun activist Adam Kokesh says someday he's going to run as an independent for the presidency, and his platform is going to be a simple one. Abolish the federal government. Adam?
How you doing, sir?
Since July 9th, 31-year-old Adam Kokesh has been incarcerated in a cell in the Fairfax County Jail, which measures 7 by 7.5 feet. On Independence Day, Kokesh had a colleague shoot a video of the pro-gun activist loading a shotgun on D.C.'s Freedom Plaza. U.S. Park Police used a flash grenade when their SWAT team later served a search warrant at Kokesh's home in Herndon. Kokesh was arrested when officers say they found hallucinogenic mushrooms at the house. In an exclusive jailhouse interview, Adam Kokesh denies any connection to the drugs.
If they found a stash of magic mushrooms in my house, they were not mine.
Any idea whose they were or why they were in your house?
I'm pretty confident that whether or not they found anything, the full paper bags that they brought into my house would ensure that they would have charges to bring against me.
Are you implying that those drugs were planted?
Yes.
Kokesh, who's been arrested several times by U.S. Park Police, says that agency has a vendetta against him. He believes the evidence in the drug case is weak. Federal officers have now filed a weapons charge against Kokesh for wielding the shotgun on the 4th of July.
Was it a real shotgun, and were they really shells going into it in the video you posted?
Yes.
You did know that that was illegal in D.C.
It's called civil disobedience.
Adam Kokesh believes the Second Amendment to the Constitution will provide him a successful defense against the D.C. gun charge. The former U.S. Marine who served in Iraq plans to bring his anti-government views before voters.
Are you running for president?
Yes, sir, in 2020 on the platform of an orderly dissolution of the United States federal government.
Why is that a good idea?
Why is having the federal government a good idea at this point?
Adam Kokesh believes the U.S. military is more harmful than helpful to American security, and the government as a whole has burdened its citizenry with debt. Adam Kokesh is 70% disabled from his military service. He says he lives on that money. His supporters, through their anti-government website, are asking people to send money for bail and send money to hire a lawyer. But for now, the future presidential candidate, Adam Kokesh, is residing in the Fairfax County Jail. Will.
John Hanrahan with our jailhouse interview. Thank you.
Jailhouse interview. I've never heard that called a jailhouse interview on the news. That's interesting.
It's better than jailhouse rock.
It was jailhouse rock, man. Okay, that thing is interesting for a number of reasons. One is the interviewer seemed sympathetic to him. He shook his head at one point at the beginning when he was first introducing it, but it seemed more in disbelief than disapproval.
Yeah, he actually said, what was it that this was the biggest, stop the presses, he said?
Yeah,
Big story?
Yeah, and it is a big story. I think it's the first time, now this was the local D.C. Fox News affiliate, or Virginia or D.C., let me see, I don't know. But, you know, those things get I'm sure that got replayed, snippets of it, probably out of context on all the other national news, you know, CNN, all of them, you know, the alphabet soup of stupid news agencies. I'm sure they all played it, you know, Fox National, MSNBC, ABC, I'm sure they all played it. So that's the first time ever in history, in American history, that someone has been shown on mainstream news denouncing the U.S. government while smiling and looking likable and saying things that 48% of the listeners are going to agree with, you know?
Yeah, and you didn't immediately have somebody coming on to clarify and say how evil he is and how that they do not, you know, that he's a bad person for saying that. They didn't actually do that. There was no disclaimer or anything.
Yeah. And he hasn't done anything violent. He's not, you know, American Taliban. He's not blowing things up. He's not shooting anybody. He's not even advocating for that. His crime is cocking a shotgun 10 miles away from where it would be totally legal to cock a shotgun. So, yeah, man, it's pretty bizarre to me. It's pretty bizarre.
He claims to be an anarchist, And I kind of have some problems with that.
Because he's running for president to use the government to dissolve the government?
Yeah, that's kind of like you know, a prostitute claiming to be a virgin. I just there's fundamental impossibilities involved. And I've heard him on Alex Jones's show talking about how he wants to dissolve the federal government and go only with state governments. And in the same, it was like one sentence after the other, he says, you don't have, talking about people wanting a federal government, he says, you don't have the right to say who's going to rule over me.
Yeah.
Then in the next sentence, he's like, we need this to be state governments so that locally we can decide who rules over us.
Well, he's not a principled anarchist, and that is not to say he's an unprincipled person. There's a difference, I would say, because the former is based on ignorance and the latter is based on being evil. He's not evil. He doesn't understand the intricacies of no government versus small government. And he's a lot less of a constitution licker than he used to be. He used to be, I don't know. He's had a bit of a journey, but his main purpose in the liberty movement, I think, is being the pinnacle of macho libertarian flash. And it's actually, there was a term, libertarian macho flash, in the 70s in the Libertarian Party. I call it macho libertarian flash. I think it sounds better. Actually, it was a mistake at first, but I didn't correct it because I like it better. And I didn't want to admit I made a mistake. So it was something that they came up with in the early Libertarian Party that was a name for a thing you were to avoid. Because when you had a discussion with a statist about having smaller government, the Libertarian Party wanted to say things like, yes, marijuana should be decriminalized and legal in small quantities. And anyone who wants a concealed carry permit who's not a violent felon should be able to get one. And the macho libertarian flasher says, man, heroin should be available to school children in vending machines as long as they're privately owned and operated. And anyone should be able to carry a machine gun, and they should be in vending machines right next to the heroin vending machine. And I always take that tack for a couple of reasons. One, it's the only ethical answer. And two, it's kind of a strategy. You probably don't like this aspect of it, but if you're going to go for less net boot on your neck, go for no boot on your neck. And it's like any negotiation. You might end up with less. You know, you ask for more than you think you're going to get right away. So, but I think it's an important thing. And a lot of people, especially Libertarian Party people and minarchists and constitutionalists, often don't like it, macho libertarian flash. But I think it's important, and the Fiends have been accused of it. And you've actually started to do a tiny bit more of it since you started listening to the Fiends and talking to me. I've noticed that. I don't even know if you've noticed that, but you have.
Probably. Yeah.
But, you know, like, the distance between your macho libertarian flash to my macho libertarian flash is about the same distance of mine to Adam Kokesh. You know, he is, you know, with macho libertarian flash, you are, I mean, with the principles of anarchy, you are the absolute college professor. And, you know, Neem and I are the 11th graders, and Adam's the fifth grader. As far as macho libertarian flash, you are the guy learning to play guitar in his room. I'm in a bar band that about 100 people come see, and Adam Kokesh is like the Rolling Stones. Not the Rolling Stones, because they're old. You know, whoever's popular and hip and cool this week, Coldplay, I don't know, whoever it is, Radiohead. He's Radiohead. Yeah, and I'm a bar band, and you're learning to play guitar.
Adam has come a long way. I remember listening to him when he very first sort of appeared on the scene. And At the time, I just thought, well, he's another one of these right-wingers who's grabbed hold of the words liberty and libertarian and stuff. And he was at that time. But he's made a tremendous journey during that time. He's not there yet. I hope he gets there. He has a lot of the right concepts, but I think he just hasn't fleshed them all out in his mind. I hate to insult, you know, Marine listeners that I know that are out there, at least on my podcast, but he thinks like a Marine, which is ram it with your head until it's dead, and then we'll figure it all out at the end. And you know, that works great if you're a Marine and you're just taking orders and you're doing what you're supposed to do. But when you get into free thinking, yeah, we don't have the resources at our bounds to be able to lose people permanently, you know, to the enemy forces. And I think Adam is really playing on the border of the line of us losing him to the enemy forces when he plays with these games like this.
What do you mean? To becoming counterproductive or to be becoming in their employ? What are you saying?
No. Yeah, no, to be locked away in jail for the next 5 years.
To be in their employ making license plates and doing telemarketing calls for the state for 4 cents an hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sad and scary, and I hope that doesn't happen. I think it's going to be difficult for him to not do some time with what they have on him or think they have on him or pretend to have on him and what they want to do to him. You know, I mean, that video when they were talking about the park police having a vendetta against him and showing him getting arrested at the dance-a-thon thing, that was a really good example of how the government uses its guns and statism to make it the biggest bully on the block, because Adam's standing in the Jefferson Memorial doing the robot. And if anyone remembers the robot, it's a really goofy disco dance. It's like, and you're pretending to be a robot. It's really funny watching him do it. And this little bicycle cop park policeman guy, who's like half Adam's size, comes up and grabs him and throws him to the ground. And Adam like keeps doing the robot on the ground. I love that about Adam. Like, there's another video of him somewhere from 2006 of him being arrested, putting up anti-war posters, and a cop is trying to handcuff him and he's still putting the poster up. I love that about him. But this little guy who, because he carries the gun, gets to throw a big muscle bound guy like Adam Kokesh down to the ground. And Adam, I mean, if this was a street fight, two guys of similar build, the Adam-sized guy would have wiped the floor with this guy, you know? I mean, it's like, I'm from the government, so I have force multipliers of guns and laws, and I get to throw you to the ground and body slam you. That wasn't a fair fight, man. And I'm not saying Adam would have beat the guy up, but a guy Adam's size and a guy this cop size in a street brawl, Adam would be walking away with the Adam guy'd be walking away with the bloody lip. The other guy'd be carried off in a stretcher, man. That's the government for you.
The funny thing about that struck me was that the guy tries to choke Adam, but his fingers are not strong enough to get actually choke
Adam's massive bull neck. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got more muscles in his neck than the guy's got in his hands, arms, and shoulders combined. And
I know.
Every time I see that little clip of the guy trying to choke him and Adam just looking at him like, I'm breathing. You're not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, they now have him on camera on the news saying, yes, I took a loaded shotgun, I took a shotgun, a real shotgun into DC, and I loaded it, you know, because that was there was a lot of talk on the internet of that. Maybe that was faked or green screened or the gun wasn't fully operational. But he just said on camera that, you know, it was a real gun. It was real shot shells and he loaded it really in DC. So even if the mushrooms were planted and he can prove that, you know, the feds can get him on some serious gun charges and some felonies and probably are not going to be talked out of it on a Second Amendment. You know, I don't want to damn the guy to anything. I mean, there could be a, you know, Hail Mary pass or something that pulls him out of this. But, you know, on the average, anybody who did that would end up serving some time in a federal penitentiary.
I think his best chance, and I think if he gets a good attorney, which he should get the best attorney that he can afford, but I think his best chance is going after the validity of the warrant and whether or not the warrant covered specifically Schedule A drugs. Because if the warrant didn't cover Schedule A drugs and it was just to go in there for a gun that was used in a video, then I'm thinking there might be a loophole here where he can get that part of it thrown out, and that would make the gun that they found inadmissible as evidence because they didn't find the actual shotgun, as far as I'm told.
Well, they found a gun, but they said they found a gun. We're playing Mark Stevens here. We're playing, you know, imagination lawyer here. And
No. Because Mark Stevens wants to go in and use magic words himself.
Yeah.
And I'm saying really get a good attorney, and a good attorney can probably defeat the warrant.
It's my understanding with warrants, and anybody's welcome to correct me if you're wrong, but it's my understanding that a warrant, according to the Constitution, has to name the person's place to be, or place to be searched, and the thing they're looking for. But if they find something else illegal during the commission of that search, looking in places where the other thing they're authorized, quote unquote, to look for could be found, they can prosecute you for that other thing. Now, I believe the way it works is not, okay, if they're looking for a shotgun and they start looking through paper folders that are very thin that couldn't hold a shotgun, and they found the record of some other crime in there, they could not use that. But if they're looking in a drawer that could fit a shotgun and they find mushrooms that they didn't plant, he says they planted them, but you know, let's not say his case, let's say an arbitrary case. You know, if they're looking in something that's the size of the thing they're looking for and they find something else, I do believe that they have in the past often successfully prosecuted for that other thing.
That could be. The other part that strikes me is that if in a theoretical situation, like we're talking about, not necessarily Adams, but in a situation where cops are actually putting drugs there, and then, you know, as is assumed in this case, I've actually been involved in cases where cops did that. And in everyone that I know of for certain, they used cocaine. That was the standard operating procedure. If you're going to set somebody up, they would plant cocaine on them.
Well, probably, yeah, because it has the most penalty for the least weight.
Correct. And you tell it to a jury.
And
you
say scared.
This person. Yeah, absolutely.
But the thing is, psychedelic mushrooms, I believe, are also Schedule One, like cocaine. And they do things like that per weight. Like, you know, an ounce of magic mushrooms does not have nearly as many doses as an ounce of cocaine, but they still charge those drugs by the ounce. And as we know, they often charge like the container it's in and the pipe it's in, like they did with Jillian with pot, which is not schedule. Is it schedule one? I don't know. There's so many laws, I can't keep up with them. But I think if they were going to plant something on Adam, mushrooms would make sense, because it doesn't necessarily sound scary like cocaine does, but it sounds weird. It sounds really weird, man. Mushrooms. It sounds fungusy. It sounds, you know, like Alice in Wonderland. It makes it sound like this person is not to be trusted because they're using something magical, you know? That's what I think.
I don't think a DA, and I would believe that a DA would be involved if something like this was going to happen. I don't think a DA would go in that direction, because you have to think of what the jury is going to be thinking and how you're going to have to educate the jury. And I would say the vast majority of American old people who are going to allow themselves to be on a jury
have a knee-jerk reaction about cocaine, but would have to be educated on why they should have a knee-jerk reaction about mushrooms.
Yeah. And attorneys, just like all other humans, want to attain what they want to obtain with the least amount of effort possible and the least amount of risk. And I think most prosecutors just don't have the guts to do something like that. I think if they were going to plant something, they'd plant, you know, something super scary, crack or coke.
Well, it sounds to me like you're making a case for Adam is lying, and I don't like that, because we don't know.
Well, we don't know.
And I think that mushrooms, as Nima says, are an important part of the anarchist food pyramid. Or it could be argued, if he is disabled, you know, a doctor could have prescribed them for his disability. We're getting off on just BS here. This is, I don't want to play the Mark Stevens game, and I don't want to conjecture. And for any law authority type minions listening, I do not know Adam Kokesh. I have no knowledge of anything of his dealings, firsthand, secondhand, or otherwise. And the extent of my conversations with Adam Kokesh has been me calling him a jock, on Facebook and him saying, well, F you, whoever you are. And that's the extent of the communication I've had with Adam. And then me explaining why I said the jock thing and him saying, posting a comment on my blog that said, well, okay, I guess you should have just said that up front, you know, carry on, whatever. So that's the extent of contact I've ever had with that man. So I'm not in his team. I don't have knowledge of any of his doings. And we are conjecturing and talking out our butts like everybody in the media. And we are the media.
And we might also add that neither of us uses drugs of any kind. Or at least not illegal drugs. I take medication for my stomach and prescribe medications. But as far as illicit drugs, neither of us uses drugs, right?
Yeah, I'm vaping nicotine right now. But yeah, and that's not a ploy. That's not us saying, you can waterboard my friends who hang out with me and find out that I don't do drugs. I did a lot of drugs and quit on July 7th, 1994. And you haven't even had a drink of alcohol since then. I've had no mind-altering drugs. So there, and Nima is has been sober for a couple months too now. He's quit drinking. So yeah, we're the square team. We're the square team of liberty.
Absolutely. I haven't had anything to do with any illegal drug of any kind since let's see, January of 1981.
You drink though, right?
I do like alcohol. Yes.
Yes.
Sometimes to excess, as some can witness. But typically, I try to keep that in a controlled, with food and to enhance food and that kind of thing.
As some can witness, you mean people who've been around you, or do you mean like you've done casts drunk?
No, I've never. I make sure that I'm always very sober and not had anything at all when I do a podcast. But no, like at Pork Fest and things like that, I drank freely.
You know, you never. I had it in my notes with Nima too. You never got to tell this story. Tell the story about the guy planting the flag next to you on July 4th.
Yeah, that was really wild. We were going across upstate New York in our RV, going from campground to campground, and this was the week of July 4th, so we had to call ahead and make sure that we had spots because the campgrounds fill up during that time frame. So we were in one campground for one day only, and that was for the July 4th, and we had to be out the next morning by 10 a.m. because they already had the place booked. So we pull in. I hook up the RV and everything, and we get settled down, and another RV pulls in just minutes after we got ours hooked up. He pulls in, and he doesn't – the normal thing you want to do in the heat of the summer is you want to get your RV plugged in as fast as possible so you can get the AC going. And the other thing is you want to hook up the sewage tanks so that you can dump what you've been driving around with. And so rather than do that, this guy leaps out of his RV and almost runs to the edge of his camp space that he's rented for the day and jams this American flag into the ground. Like, you know, it's like he discovered America or something, or like he landed on the moon. I declare this campground for America.
I claim this piece of engine land for America.
And that's the funny part is that it's actually a tribal owned campground on reservation.
Yeah, that's property. Why I said that. Yeah.
And so here he is on a tribal campground on reservation property, planting his American flag, you know, because he's got to have that out because it's 4th of July. If he didn't have that out, who knows? The spirit of Abraham Lincoln might come back and kick him in the butt or something.
Yeah. And we'll do a little bit more, but then we're going to go into the third part where I'm going to give a detailed analysis and compliments about your justifiable war episode. It was the best Ben Quaker yet, but I'm not done. So there was a news piece. Connecticut State Police receive first registrations for assault weapons because Connecticut recently passed a law that you have to register them. And David Kadria, who the Freedom Fiends interviewed recently, had the best comment about these feisty assault weapon owners in Connecticut registering their weapons. It was a two-word analysis, and it was Mulan Labia.
Which means, come and get it.
Yeah, but no, Mulan Labe is come and get it.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning backwards. You have to take them from our cold, dead hands in ancient Greece. But he was saying Mulan Labia, like, what a bunch of pussy cats. I don't know. I think it's insulting to women, but I still think it's funny because my wife thought it was funny. Put it that way.
Well, that authorizes it then.
Well, it's insulting to women in the same sense that, what was it? There's all right, let's stop and come back. Let's go to the market. Say worms.
Worms.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. That's BADQUAKER.com.
Yep, but now we'll come out of it and we're rolling. So Ben, you ever seen a show called The Newsroom?
I have not.
You should check it out. It's a really good show on, let's see, what is it? HBO. And it, you know, it's basically a guy in a newsroom somewhere, a fictitious newsroom, who's the banner anchor on that show. He's probably about 52. And he's like an Edward R. Murrow type journalist. And it's him fighting against the corporate right wing people that run his company, or just corporate rich people who run his company and don't want to insult advertisers. And the in casting brilliance, the right wing billionaire lady that owns his company is played by Jane Fonda. Yeah, but there's a thing in there where this guy. Now he's a statist and he's a registered Republican and pretty much centrist. But you know, with that kind of news type stuff, it kind of to me doesn't matter that they're political because they're going to be anyway. Like Ben Swan is political. You know, he wants a small government. He's political, but that kind of news transcends that. I mean, you know, Edward R. Murrow was a lefty Democrat, but he really did news that people still look up to. I have a picture of Edward R. Murrow on my wall. Actually, it's next to the list of words you can't say on radio because I think, well, Edward R. Murrow never said these words, beep, 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 on radio. So, yeah, he's Edward R. Murrow. So this show, The Newsroom, the main news guy in it gets in a lot of trouble with his boss and his corporate masters because he says that the Tea Party, the modern Tea Party, are the American Taliban. And he gets in a lot of trouble for it. And later when someone asks him about it, he's like, you know, he's unapologetic about it. And someone says about a year later, like, yeah. And then you called the American Tea Party, the Tea Party, the American Taliban. And what happened? And he said, the Taliban got upset. And I was thinking about it, though, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that some factions of the original Tea Party, of the Boston Tea Party, were kind of the American Taliban. And I'm thinking specifically of brewer and patriot Samuel Adams. And your Justifiable War episode really educated me on a lot of things. Now, here's why I say that. And I'm not being an apologist for the Taliban. They're some bad guys. They're bad guys. But a lot of Americans conflate all them Middle Easterners. And a really common one is conflating Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. People are like, we got to go over there and kill the Taliban because they blew up the World Trade Center. And it's like, no, Al-Qaeda blew up the World Trade Center. The Taliban, the Al-Qaeda want to come to America and destroy things. The Taliban are kind of like the National Guard in their respective countries. They're basically the, you know, keep your soldiers off our property. If you come here, they will shoot. You know, we will shoot you kind of thing. They are basically doing what any Americans who aren't Mulan Labias and are more aptly Mulan Labes would do. You know, the average gun owner who watches Red Dawn every 4 months and loves it and says, you know, if that ever happened on my ground, I'd be out there doing what those kids in Red Dawn were doing. That's what the Taliban is doing. Would you agree?
Yeah, pretty much. And taking it back to Sam Adams and several other people that were very much like him.
Asymmetrical warfare.
Yeah, that's what they were doing. They burned people's, you know, they burned merchants' shops. They threw bricks at the governor and things like that. I was just reading not long ago about the Boston Massacre. And according to who you hear tell the story,
now, it's you're talking about different. Something a long time ago, not the recent bombing in Boston. What is the Boston Massacre for people who don't read history or have been to American public schools where they no longer teach? Even they don't even teach the statist version of it anymore. They teach you how to vote and how to fill out unemployment forms and welfare forms in school. That's what they do now.
Yeah. But according to the original Boston Massacre, which was soldiers firing upon unarmed protesters, essentially, according to how you look at it, it was either, one soldier was getting harassed because he was a soldier and he was guarding one of the tax houses that they had there. And so he was getting harassed and people were throwing snowballs at him. Literally, that's what the problem was. They were throwing snowballs at him. And the call went out. And so a bunch of other soldiers come running up and sort of form a semicircle around him to protect him. And the protesters are calling them names and throwing snowballs at them. And except one of the protesters was holding a stick of firewood and grabbed as the soldiers were essentially waving their bayoneted rifles around, one of the protesters, grabbed the bayonet and sort of pushed the rifle to the side and whacked one of the soldiers with his piece of firewood. And as the soldier fell to the ground, he yelled fire. And that protester was struck twice in the chest with bullets from the soldiers firing on him. Now,
so basically it started as a snowball fight.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because there's a picture of me, a really good picture of me somewhere, of me open carrying in the summer in Wyoming, our first summer here, and I'm holding a snowball while open carrying. And it actually was the picture on Wikipedia on the open carry article for years. And someone finally took it down and replaced it with another picture. And the reason, and this was a good reason, was it was confusing from an encyclopedic standpoint because it looked like it was saying open carry means carrying a visible gun while wanting to start a snowball fight. But I didn't know that about the Boston Massacre.
Yeah, and according to who you listen to, for instance, Samuel Adams, his spin on it was, look, the guy with the firewood had as much right to carry and use the firewood in defense as the guy with the gun. There was nothing, and he literally said, just because he was wearing a costume doesn't give him the right to point his gun at people. And if he points his gun at somebody, they have the right to whack him with a stick. And that was Samuel Adams' argument, and he actually wrote this in the Boston, whatever the big Boston newspaper of the day was. But Sam Adams' cousin, John Adams, defended the soldier, saying the soldier feared for his life, and basically he fired. He did the typical argument that somebody would give to defend a cop. because that's basically what we're talking about. We're talking, there was no difference between soldiers and cops in those days. That's all terminology that
we
accept now.
That's why I say that the Third Amendment against quartering soldiers, which most people think is obsolete, I think totally implies, because I think that having a militarized police force living in every community, being paid for, even though they're in their own homes, we're paying for those homes. I think that violates the Third Amendment if you want to take a constitutional tack on it.
Yeah, Sam
and
Adams.
I said that like a year ago, and I recently read an article that said that in the American Bar Association newsletter, which was kind of mind-blowing to me. Like, wow, I came up with something I've never heard, that some respected constitutional attorney got published in some constitutional attorney magazine.
There was just an article the other day on a family in Las Vegas that had the local police.
Yeah, and that what happened was the American Bar Association reprinted this article from a few months ago when they were talking about that new case. Yeah, because somebody actually took a Third Amendment charge against the cops for taking over their house.
Right. They wanted it for surveillance so that they could set up a surveillance on another house. And so they were forcing themselves on to a totally innocent person taking their home.
Hey, have you ever heard the theory? Have you ever heard the theory that the thing they teach in grade school, or they used to when they actually taught even the statist version of American history in schools, which they don't really do anymore. Have you ever heard you've heard the theory, right? That, what is the common theory of who fired the first shot at the Battle of Lexington and Concord? It's the British, right? That's what you've heard.
Correct.
You know, and that the Americans were like, we're only going to fire in self-defense. They have to start it. And there were actually some founding father who talked about that we need to be the victims in this, and that's the term he used, to sway support of other colonies and of other governments, other federal governments, other nations. But have you ever heard the theory that Sam Adams actually took it as a sniper shot from off on the side somewhere?
I've never heard that.
That's a theory, man. You should look that one up. You should look that one up. You should look that one up and do a story about it.
Wow. I just had a power flash. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. It's the central scrutinizer. They're going to remotely control the brakes on your podcast and cause you to crash. You there, Ben? Oh, we've lost Ben. So, Ben, are you there? Yeah, so Ben lost power. He's calling on the cell phone. I no longer have a Skype phone number. So we're just going to finish this up in a really weird way. The only thing I was going to really say, and we're almost at the end of our time here, the only thing I was really going to say is you missed a couple things that would have been great to say. You did talk about how in that episode about how the American Revolution was not really a revolution. It was more of a civil war. But the thing you missed saying was that the Civil War was more of a war of independence than a civil war. So the War of Independence was actually a civil war, and the Civil War was actually a war of independence. Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, excellent. And the other thing you really missed was when you talked about how the revolution started after the Tea Party. That was their warning shot, basically, before any shots. That the Boston Tea Party throwing the privately owned tea into the water, into the bay, was because that was fascist, corporatist, government controlled, monopolized British East India Company tea. What you missed saying that I thought of later that was great is basically the Boston Tea Party was the original Occupy Wall Street. Would you agree? Yep. So whenever anybody who is a Tea Party member now yells at and criticizes the Occupy Wall Street people, as they so often do, and vice versa, everyone should just get along, man, because historically you're really the same group of people.
Yeah, there might be
slight variance,
but basically that's right.
Yep. So I'm going to say worms and then keep you on the phone here for our private post-game secret phone call. Say worms, Ben. Cool. The central scrutinizer cannot keep down the Anarchy Gumbos, the Freedom Fiends, and the Bad Quaker, the Ben Quaker, the Bad podcast, Ben Stone. All right. So, worms.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy, me, from the U.S. Get the U.S. West out my blood.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the
Anarchy Gumbo Podcast.
Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends.
Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com.
Cast.